Good morning, everyone. Okay. It's nice to meet y'all. I'm Andrew Kim. Welcome to the happiness talk. If you are looking for the sadness talk, next door. So I'll give you guys time if you want to go there. And just to start off by setting some appropriate expectations, you're not necessarily going to leave this talk any happier. You may even leave it sadder, and that's fine. But just as a warning to y'all, and I'm super glad that we get to be in this room. It seems really appropriate. Just stepping in here made me pretty happy, so awesome. So I wanted to start off by asking you guys a few questions. If you raise your hand, that's a yes. If you don't raise your hand, that's a no, so you have to answer. So are you happy? So that's most of us. Maybe a little fluctuating. I like the maybe. Okay, how about this one? Is God happy? A little so-so. Okay. How about the next one? Is Jesus happy? Wow, more Jesus than God. That's interesting. And then, what other questions did I have? Oh, does God want you to be happy? Yeah, pretty good. Okay, and then the last one, maybe more relevant, this is a good group to ask. The missionaries you know, are they generally happy? Some like low raises. Yeah, very cool. Well, it was good. I just wanted to kind of see what people are thinking about some of these topics. This is a huge topic. So happiness is... People have been talking about happiness since the beginning of time. This is maybe one of the most universal topics. This lecture is not, this talk is not complete. Like, this is maybe an intro to happiness and an intro to the intro of happiness because the topic is so big. But I think it's worth talking about. It's worth discussing some of these questions, and it's worth considering how we pursue happiness as believers, especially in the context of missions. Okay, so... Just want to introduce myself. This is my family, and can you guess what my ethnic background is based off of this picture? Korean. So we're wearing some classic hanbok outfits, which is the traditional Korean dress. What else do you guys notice? Anyone real sharp here? Something that's not Korean on the right there? So we're holding Chinese lanterns. And so this is a little mix. My wife is Malaysian-born Chinese or Chinese-born... Malaysian-born Chinese, I always mix it up. So my wife is of a Chinese background, and our kids are Korean-Chinese. They usually say both when you ask them which one they are, which is good. When they're upset at me, they say Chinese. On the left here, they're wearing Korean outfits, not to be mistaken with Korean, and that's a traditional outfit in Burma of one of the minority groups. And the reason they're wearing that is because our clinic is called Ethne Health, and we take care of about... Our population that we take care of is about 50% refugee or immigrant-born, and our staff represent that. So within our staff, we have people from Burma, multiple ethnic groups within Burma, South Sudan, Ethiopia, Afghanistan, just a bunch of countries. And it's one of the coolest staffs you'll ever meet. It's so much fun. They bring a ton of joy. A lot of what I've kind of gone through on my quote-unquote happiness journey is because of what I've seen in them and learned from them, especially people from other countries. You may know this, in taking care of refugees, you learn a lot about refugee backgrounds. Most of our staff, either they or their families have been escaping war-torn countries, persecution. They have the craziest stories you'll ever hear. They have the craziest stories of standing up for their faith, of real suffering, and it's incredible. I've learned so much from them. They've made me a better person. And this is a really cool picture that's significant for me. Do you guys see the hand? So that represents 5 years. Tomorrow is our 5-year celebration for Ethne Health being open. So just to make my talk clear, I want to start with this quote from St. Augustine of Hippo, obviously one of the most famous church fathers, the writer of City of God, Confessions, one of the most famous preachers, honestly, maybe one of the first true preachers in the world. So, further, as there is no one who does not wish to be happy, so there is no one who does not wish to be. So, crystal clear, right? And this is my translation. Everyone wants... Yeah, so everyone wants to be happy. I think this is a universal truth. This is one of the reasons I was drawn to this topic. I think at the core of our being, of how God created us, we seek happiness. And I think there's no way around it. There's no way to avoid it. I've never met someone that said, I do not want to be happy. Or maybe you guys have, but it's very rare. We all, to some degree, really want to be happy. And the reason it's important is because our neighbors want to be happy. The people that we're ministering to want to be happy. So that's just something we're going to continue to think about. So part of the reason I chose this topic was it's just so essential to my being, to the beings of our neighbors. But one of the other reasons I kind of chose this topic was being in Clarkston, Georgia, where we take care of this large refugee population, it's become the city has become a hub for missionaries, especially domestic missionaries that are reaching out to the local refugee population, and then international missionaries when they come back on furlough. And so there's a ton of missionaries that are always within the Clarkston community. And as part of my job as a primary care doctor, I get to take care of a lot of missionaries. It's actually one of my greatest privileges. It's one of the things I look most forward to when I see someone that does ministry on my schedule. I just get excited because I want to take care of the laborers. I want to take care of them and honor them and really love them. One thing I've realized as I've taken care of a lot of missionaries is there's so many mental health issues. I don't know if you guys have seen this or recognize this in yourselves or in the people that you work with. There is a lot of mental health kind of issues that I've seen within the Christian missionary community. And I was just, one of my patients that I've been seeing for 3 or 4 years, I'm going to just call him Tim to let him remain anonymous, but he has been through a ton of difficulty. He's had to change agencies. His family life has been struggling, and I asked him, like, are you happy? I asked him this very question. He said, absolutely not. And I said, what actually brings you happiness? He told me, and he thought for a while, and he said, the only thing that makes me happy is doing ministry. And it was just the strangest answer. I was like, I guess that's good, but not good. And I couldn't quite understand what to make of that. And it really started my journey of, like, what does God say about happiness? And should this man be happy? Or is he suffering for the gospel's sake and it's all right not to be happy? It really brought all these questions to mind. And this was about a year ago. And in that year, I've just started like researching this and looking into it. And I want to share with you my journey in that. The other thing I've noticed is my staff that are from war-torn countries that have been through the most horrendous traumas, that came here as child brides at the age of 13, just all these stories, they're some of the most joyous, happy people I've ever met. And it's just, this perspective is different. And I think in talking with my staff, I've just learned so much about happiness because their experience is very different than the American experience. And their level of happiness is also very different. And so there's something going on there. I realize this is pretty anecdotal, what I'm saying. So I did spend some time actually looking at the literature. There is very little literature about this, about mental health and missionaries. This is a study that came out of Biola, and essentially I tried to highlight it here. You don't have to read all of it, obviously, but about 40 to 50% of missionaries are reporting significant anxiety. About 30 to 30% or so of missionaries are reporting significant depression. Those are pretty big numbers. I think the numbers may be higher. When I asked my friends that are missionaries what they thought the numbers were, they all said, like, 75%, 100%, I've heard multiple times. And so I don't know what the real numbers are. Maybe some of the sending agencies have actual numbers on this. I would love to see that. But I think this is a really significant problem. It's something that really affects our missionary community. And I think it affects kind of how we witness. And it affects how people view Christians that are within the community. We know that throughout Scripture, a lot of the people in Scripture were not very happy. So this is David from Psalm 42. We think maybe this is when he was kind of banished by his son Absalom, so obviously a very traumatic moment in his life. So he says this, "My tears have been my food day and night, while people say to me all day long, 'Where is your God?'" So I would guess PHQ 9 of like 15 here, probably. And this is Paul from in 2 Corinthians, and he's talking about his time in Asia. And we don't really know what happened in Asia. There's not a lot of clarity about that, but this is what he says. We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. I think medically we call that suicidal ideation. Like, this is off the charts, PhQ9. So really, like, in these biblical fathers, like, they were depressed many a time. And is this all right? Because we also see this, the same David, the same Paul in Psalm 37, take delight in the Lord and he will give you your heart's desires. We see this with Paul in Philippians, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Super happy, super sad. I don't think they were bipolar. I think this speaks to something going on, and we're going to get there. So in this talk, just to give you guys a framework, I want to start off by looking at how the church has viewed happiness throughout history. And then I want to talk about how the Bible talks about happiness, the Greek, the Hebrew. And I'm not going to go into detail, but what I just think are the highlights of it. And then from how the Bible talks about happiness to what the Bible actually says about happiness. And then I'm going to end by talking about how we pursue happiness and what that means and looks like. So I want to start off by just giving you some resources that I looked at while I was doing this. There's a ton of books out there. There's a ton of writing out there, podcasts, YouTube videos, etc. You could go down that rabbit hole forever. And there was this excellent book by Randy Alcorn about happiness. And if you guys want to look a really comprehensive book that looks at the history, that looks at a bunch of what a bunch of different people have said, he kind of goes through it. It's a really good survey of the history of happiness in the church. And a lot of my material is from looking through this book and being inspired by it. I learned a ton. And then there's another guy that I'll reference later named Arthur Brooks. Does anyone know Arthur Brooks? Probably heard a talk by him or read a book by him. Wrote a great book called From Strength to Strength. Ton of other books. He's a columnist for The Atlantic. He's a Harvard Business School happiness professor. This is what he does. But he's also a devout Catholic. And his faith comes out in a lot of his writing. And it's really fascinating. And I think I've learned a ton from just reading his stuff that I'll talk about later. Most importantly, the Bible. This has been a huge reference. The Bible, in many ways, is a discourse on happiness. We see so much about happiness. I think the word happiness or one of its synonyms appears something like, it's over 2,000 times in the Bible. It's everywhere. It's in every book of the Bible. It's just so pronounced, you can't avoid it. Okay. Then I want to spend some time talking about the elephant in the room. Has anyone noticed it? What is the elephant? Has anyone felt uncomfortable as I've started this talk about happiness and not mentioning something else? Joy, right? Does it make anyone uncomfortable when I'm talking only about happiness and not about joy? When I told my friends, my wife, when I was doing this talk, she was like, is that biblical? And she's looking out for me, obviously. But yeah, there in Christianity, in modern Christianity, we talk a lot about joy instead of happiness. This is from the Ren Collective worship group. I thought this summarized it really well. Happiness is smiling when the sun's out. Joy is dancing in the downpour. I think this is a really good summary of kind of how the church today, for many people, views happiness versus joy. They're two distinct things. Happiness is situational. Joy is, I don't know, like this shalom, always feeling. Have you guys heard that before? Okay. So we're going to get to it. This is even more evidence of that. This is from the Gospel Coalition, this article, The Problem with Pursuing Happiness. So obviously a lot of writing about this. And then not just about happiness versus joy, but happiness versus holiness, that you kind of have to choose one or the other. Are you going to be happy or are you going to be holy, as if they're completely mutually exclusive? And so in addressing this question of happiness versus joy, which I think is a really, really important question, really important idea to address, I think it would be wise to start with looking at what the church says about happiness throughout history. Let me move to this section. Okay, so we're going to play a little game. I'm going to show you a picture, and you tell me who this is. Okay, first one. Anyone? Yes, St. Augustine. And I gave you guys a little clue because I talked about Augustine in the beginning, right? I was trying to prep you for this moment. Well done, one for one. So St. Augustine of Hippo, from the 4th century, incredible church father. He was the bishop of Hippo. He preached, they say, 1,000 sermons or 2,000 sermons, something crazy. I don't know if how much you guys know about the history of Augustine. He has a crazy history. He has a crazy conversion story. And this is from Confessions. It's kind of an autobiography, theological piece that he wrote later in life. And it says this: following after God is the desire of happiness. To reach God is happiness itself. And part of Augustine's journey, if you read Confessions, is about his pursuit of happiness and how that led him to Christ, which I think is really cool. Okay. St. Francis of Assisi. Yeah, who said that? Awesome. 2 for 2. You guys are pretty good. Okay, St. Francis of Assisi. This is an awesome quote from him. He's the patron saint of, I think, animals, ecology, and the poor, of course. He actually talks a lot about happiness and joy. And there's a lot of stories about him talking about it. And he talks a lot about how joy, happiness, about finding joy and happiness in the midst of poverty, difficulty, of giving everything away. He's an amazing saint. So he says this: let us leave sadness to the devil and his angels. As for us, what can we be but rejoicing and glad? And in so many of his quotes and writings, this is kind of his perspective. Okay, who's this one? Martin Luther. Awesome. So Martin Luther, German, he obviously helped start the Protestant Reformation. This is an awesome quote from Martin Luther. I love it. If you are not allowed to laugh in heaven, I do not want to go there. Obviously, he wants to go to heaven. So he believes there's laughter, joy, happiness in heaven. And that is worth it. And it's maybe the reason to go there, because he does not want to go there if there's not laughter. Okay, this one's a little bit harder. Any guesses? Anyone like the wig? It's not George Washington. Okay, an American, 18th century. Jonathan Edwards. Awesome. So, very good. Yeah, so he is maybe known for his fire and brimstone sermons, extremely prolific writer. But this is, if you look at a lot of his sermons, and I've gotten to look at several of them, he talks so much about happiness. So this is from one of his writings, though. Resolved to endeavor to obtain for myself as much happiness in the other world as I possibly can, with all the power, might, vigor, and vehemence, even violence, I'm capable of. So he talks so much about the pursuit of happiness and in seeking Christ, finding happiness, and to find happiness in the other world, kind of like Martin Luther was alluding to as well. This guy looks happy. Anyone know who this is? Who is it? Spurgeon. Awesome. So, yeah, I'm not saying you should smoke or anything, but it kind of makes me want to smoke. So, famous English preacher, pastor, also extremely prolific. I'm sure many of you have read his commentaries and his writings. So this is what he says. I love what he says here. Those who are beloved of the Lord must be the most happy and joyful people to be found anywhere upon the face of the earth. Do you guys think that's true? That when people look at the church, they say, oh, those are the most happy and joyful people. Yeah. This is what he said, though, and I honestly believe it. Okay, maybe this one, I don't know if anyone will get. You guys are 5 for 5 so far.
Chambers.
Oh, who said that? How did you know that? It's really good. Yeah, so famous Scottish evangelist, most well known for his book, My Utmost for the Highest. So this is a quote from Oswald Chambers. So he passed away about a century ago. Joy is not happiness. There is no mention in the Bible of happiness for a Christian, but there is plenty said about joy. And this is very, if you guys have read My Utmost for the Highest, he's very like formulaic and distinguishes things. This is very Chambers-y. Oswald Chambers, I think I misspelled that. So what do you guys think? Does this feel the same as all the other things we've been talking about? Feels a little different. So this is probably the first mention of someone really, at least that's become famous, talking about this distinguishing between joy and happiness. And it's not a dig at Chambers. I really, especially early in my faith, this devotional is really awesome for me. Okay, everyone knows this guy, John Piper. So guys got all of them. I'm super impressed, especially Chambers. That was impressive. This is what John Piper says. And I think this is a great summary and segue. So if you have nice little categories for joy is what Christians have and happiness is what the world has, you can scrap those when you go to the Bible, because the Bible is indiscriminate in its use of the language of happiness and joy and contentment and satisfaction. It's lavish in all of them, and none of them is chosen above the other. So, yeah, this is very different than maybe some of what we hear from the modern church about joy and happiness, what Piper says. And I agree with him, and we're going to kind of go through some of how the Bible talks about happiness and why maybe Chambers was not entirely correct in what he said. So I want to start by showing you just a list of synonyms of happiness. You could go to any thesaurus and do this. And these are all the words that we often associate with happiness. And in the Bible, oftentimes these words are used for each other. And so you guys probably know this. There's a couple ways you can interpret or translate the Bible. You could have a more formal method, or you could have a more functional method. So like how literal your translation is, whether it's word to word. Like the NASB and the ESV are very literal, very word for word, though not completely. That would be impossible. The NLT is maybe more figurative, more functional rather, and then something like the Message is just paraphrasing. So very many different ways you can translate the Bible, and it shows. So this is just a little exercise I did with a couple of verses. So this is in Psalm 4:7, where it says, "Fill my heart with joy," in the NIV. In the KJV, it says, "Fill it with gladness." In the CEV, it says, "with happiness." And in the NET, it talks about being happier. You could do this with so many scripture and so many translations. This is from the New Testament, in the parable of the talents. "Come and share your master's happiness," in the NIV. "Let's celebrate together," in the NLT, "and enter into the joy of your master," in the ESV. So depending on what translation you look at, you see happiness, you see joy, you see celebration. There's a lot of different words used for these concepts. Happiness and joy are very, and if you ask most, you know, like actual theologians and the people that are actually doing these translations, they acknowledge that happiness and joy are very similar, and oftentimes that they're used for each other throughout Scripture. Another word that I really wanted to talk about, and this will become relevant later, is this word blessed. So when you hear the word blessed, what do you think that means? Anyone?
Prosperous.
What else?
Abundance.
Happy. Sorry?
Happy.
Happy? Okay. Yeah. So the word blessed in English really rarely means happiness when they ask most people what it means. Most people think, exactly as you said, like fortunate, prosperous, receiving blessing, favored. And the Hebrew word for it is asher. And this word asher is often translated blessed. There's another word in Hebrew, I think it's barak, which means having received blessing from the Lord. That's also translated blessed. Asher is not barak. Blessed, in most, early on, like in the KJV, was translated as, sorry, asher was translated as blessed in the KJV. And the reason was because back then, blessed meant happy. That's what it connoted to most people. And so when you look at modern international translations, like when they're translating this word Asher or Makarios in Greek, they translate it as the word in the language that means happy. And so when we see it in kind of our Bible and we see blessed, we think Barak. We think having received blessing, etc. But it actually means something very different. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, they have not changed it. Maybe historical reasons, we'll get to it. So in Greek, that word that's translated for Asher is Makarios. And so this is from Revelation 19:9. Where is it? Blessed are those invited to the marriage feast of the Lamb. Or Makarios are those invited to the marriage feast of the Lamb. And you would think if the word historically for Asher and Makarios mean happy, and it really means deeply happy, we should translate it so. But it's oftentimes not translated that way. When they ask the interpreters, why they do this, they say, well, happiness is kind of unspiritual, it's a shallow word, and so we don't want to use that word, at least in the English translation. Which I think is a little weird. Like, we use the word love, and man, the culture really does not use the word love appropriately either. And I think we should translate it accurately, and I think it's really important. I started looking through scripture at where Makarios or Asher are used, and this is from the Beatitudes. And I'm not going to read through all of it, but I would love for you guys to do the same exercise. Look up Makarios, and instead of saying blessed, say happy. And so instead of saying blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, happy are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. It means something different to me. When I imagine the poor in spirit, I'm not imagining them smiling, but that's what I imagine when I hear happy are the poor in spirit. I think it's different, and it's really important. Let me go back just a little bit. So one of the... So why am I spending so much time talking about this? So first, I think how we view happiness affects, and how it's translated in the Bible affects our hearts, it affects our theology, it affects how we view things like the Beatitudes that are so vital. And not just for us, but how we translate these words also affects how we connect to the world. And so I want to use ChatGPT to help us here. I promise maybe didn't use ChatGPT for any other part of this. But so I asked ChatGPT, what is joy? And this is a definition. It's a complex, multifaceted emotion generally characterized by feeling of happiness, delight, and pleasure. Okay. Then I asked ChatGPT, what is happiness? It's a positive, pleasant, emotional state characterized by feelings of contentment, joy, satisfaction, and well-being. So essentially, they like kind of define each other, right? So it's a little confusing, so I went a step further and I asked, what's the difference between happiness and joy? And I said one sentence because it gave me like a whole essay. I couldn't post that. So this is how the world views happiness and joy, thanks to ChatGPT. So happiness is a broader, enduring sense of well-being and contentment, while joy is a more intense, transient emotion associated with moments of delight and elation. Wait, this is like the opposite of how the church defines happiness and joy. So when we tell people God does not want you to be happy, what do you think they're hearing? Do you think they want to be part of a God that does not want them to be happy? If we use language like this, and our Bibles like this, the ESV, which I love, uses the word happiness the least of any other translation. Like, it's in some ways an anti-happiness translation. And I think we have to be careful of this. Like, if we are walking around and the church is not joyful and happy, that's what people see. And they see this, like, that we don't want well-being and contentment. Instead, we're talking about joy. And so these semantics are actually important. It's important for our witness. This is something, which has gotten me riled up as I've kind of been studying this. Okay, so we've talked about how the Bible is using these words, happiness and joy. And from now on, I'm going to use them interchangeably because they should be interchangeable. Now, what does the Bible actually say about happiness and joy? So I'm going to go through some of these questions we talked about earlier that I pulled you guys on, and I think you guys did pretty well. So we'll look at the Bible, And the first question is God happy? I think this is a really vital question. If we think God is angry and vengeful and just out to get us, we will never imagine a happy God. We can't introduce people to a happy God because we don't think God's happy. So as you guys have already seen, like in the parable of the talents, it talks about entering the master's joy. I think that's talking about God's joy. And I think there's a lot in the Bible about God and joy and him being happy. So yes, I think God is happy. This is maybe the most important scripture that we see about this topic. And I'm just going to look at the first Timothy 1:11, not the second one. So this is Paul writing to Timothy. And in Timothy, he's kind of, you know, he's telling people to avoid the false teachers and how to kind of deal with the false teachers that have penetrated the church there in Ephesus. So he talks, that conforms to the gospel concerning the glory of the blessed God, which was entrusted to me. So in his argument to Timothy, he talks about the centrality of the gospel, which concerns the glory of the Makarios God, or the very happy, the deeply happy God. Paul describes the gospel as the glory of the deeply happy God, that the gospel is about a deeply happy God. I think this is central to the gospel message, is that God is deeply happy. And I think it's really important we view it that way. And the second question of, is Jesus happy? I think more of you said yes. If we look historically at paintings, I would say no. If you look at any medieval paintings of Jesus, he's definitely not happy. This one's called The Resurrection from the 15th century, kind of right at the end of the medieval times. But if you look at some modern paintings, there's not many. You can find some of Jesus smiling, but you can't find any from the old days. So historically, maybe people didn't view Jesus as happy, at least when they painted him. But this is an awesome verse from the Bible, John 15:11. I've told you these things so that my joy may be in you, and your joy may be complete. Jesus is talking about his joy. And this is from the Old Testament, from Psalm 45, which we think is a prophetic psalm, and it's referenced by the writer of Hebrews. So I'm just going to read the end part of it. You love righteousness and hate wickedness. Therefore, God, your God, has anointed you with the oil of joy. And then the writer of Hebrews references this. You have loved righteousness and hated lawlessness. This is why God, your God, has anointed you with the oil of joy beyond your companions. So not only is he now saying God has this oil of joy, but it's beyond your companions. He's saying Jesus is not just happy and joyful. He's the most happy and joyful. That's who Jesus is. We should imagine a smiling Jesus. I think it changes kind of how we view Jesus. Yeah, I'm going to move forward. So does God want me to be happy is the next question. And I think most of you said yes, maybe. I think after you've heard everything I've said, the answer is yes, of course. Happy are you, O Israel. Who is like you, a people saved by the Lord? Rejoice in the Lord always. Philippians 4:4 again. I will say it again, rejoice. God wants us to be happy. He wants us to be joyful as we seek after him. And it's vital to our faith. And so if we're saying that the church has always viewed God as being happy and has viewed this journey of happiness in the way I've described, and the Bible says we should be happy, the next question is, how do we actually pursue happiness? And I think this is really important. This is maybe the most important part of this lecture in some ways. Like, how do we go about being happy? What would it look like if the church was full of joy and happiness? What if we told people, if you want to be happy, find Jesus? Because I think that's what's true. Let's see. So in this pursuit of happiness, I just did some research about how first kind of how the world views happiness and the pursuit of happiness. So this is a graph of what's called the wellness economy, $4.4 trillion. I'm not sure how much money that is. It just is up there. I couldn't find something for like the happiness economy, but wellness and happiness are pretty similar. Most of these people seeking wellness are seeking happiness. So there's a ton of money that goes into this. People are desperate for happiness. There's a ton of books about happiness. Oh man, I tried to find just a number of books. I mean, there's countless. You can find so many books about how to become happy. I looked up happiness consulting. You could pay someone a lot of money to become happy. There's a lot of happiness consultants out there. There's a movie about pursuing happiness. I don't know if you guys have seen this Will Smith movie. It's awesome. The Pursuit of Happiness. And yet, are people getting happier? We have more than we've ever had at any point in history, but the levels of happiness are actually going down. And this is in a survey of U.S. adults. If you look globally, it's pretty similar. People across the globe are becoming less happy. I couldn't find it, but if you look at the church, I suspect that's true too. Christians are probably becoming less happy. And I think most of you would agree with that. So what does that mean? Well, first, I think happiness is really multifaceted. It's not this easy, get rich quick, get happy quick thing, that you do this thing and then you're happy. I think it's much more complicated than that, and it can't be simplified to a single book. And I think true happiness lies in the gospel. And if people are moving away from the gospel, it's going to be very hard to be happy because you just have yourself. This is the part of the talk where I've really kind of looked at Arthur Brooks's work. And, you know, I'm not saying what he says is correct, but I am going to use a model that he describes about happiness. And the reason I use it is because I think it's immensely biblical, and we'll go through it. And I think it gives us amazing perspective of why happiness is so hard to reach, or why it's so hard to become happier. So let me just move my notes here. And throughout all of this, you're going to see that there is struggle and suffering involved in happiness. That in many ways, struggle and suffering are like the salt to our happiness. And maybe part of the reason the world is less happy is also because now we say suffering is no good. Now we say, oh, you're sad, that's bad. We think happiness and sad are opposites, and they're not. Happiness and unhappy are not opposites. They actually need each other. So Arthur Brooks kind of describes happiness, and I've held off on actually defining happiness. If you guys have noticed, someone mentioned that earlier. If you look up happiness in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, it says the state of being happy. It's not helpful. So I think this is more helpful. When sociologists look and study happiness, or they sometimes call it relative well-being, they notice that about 50% of it is genetic. So that's a little bit scary. Like, we don't have control of 50% of our happiness. So you can look at it, you know, for some people, the glass is half empty. Woe is me. I will be sad and miserable forever. That's fine if you want to do that. Or you could say the glass is half full. A full 50% of this is modifiable. There are things I can do to become more happy. Yes, let's figure that out. And one way to do that, and the complexities of happiness, when they look at these people that are the most happy, is they have three things: enjoyment, satisfaction, and purpose. So Arthur Brooks describes this as the macronutrients of happiness: your fat, protein, carbs. You need all three to be happy. You can't just seek one thing and be happy. And so I want to start off with enjoyment. So enjoyment is a combination of things. And I realize it gets a little semantic, but I think this is important. So enjoyment is pleasure plus communion plus memory. And I think the important distinction to make here is that enjoyment and pleasure are very different. One way to think about it is this: like, the day after Thanksgiving, I will oftentimes wake up in the morning and make myself a turkey sandwich with mayo on white bread, toasted. I don't know if you guys do that. It's the best. And I'll go sit in a corner and eat by myself. And in that moment, I definitely feel pleasure. And it's just one of the things I look forward to. But that's very different than on Thanksgiving night, sitting down with family and friends, eating turkey together, community, making memories. As I was preparing this talk, I just looked back through my phone at all my Thanksgivings and the pictures I had, and I was like in tears, like just people that have been to my house, people that I've celebrated with throughout the years, and it was immensely powerful. That's enjoyment. Turkey sandwich is pleasure. Thanksgiving is enjoyment. And that distinction is really important. So the opposite of this, like of seeking pleasure only, is drugs. Like that's one example of it. Like someone that is addicted to heroin, they're seeking pleasure. They're not doing it with their friends to make memories. They're doing it by themselves to escape memories. That's what distinguishes pleasure and enjoyment. They don't get enjoyment and happiness from it. It just leads to misery. So how do we actually go about pursuing enjoyment? I think some of you know that during COVID, some of you may have done like some celebrations on Zoom. Was that happiness? Probably not. It was miserable. A big part of happiness is actually meeting together in person. That's why Facebook probably does not make you happier, and I think they know that. But one way to look at it is celebration. That's what Thanksgiving is. That's what the Jewish people did. So I don't know if this works out. I guess the pointer doesn't work. But this is just a list, a calendar of the different festivals that the Jewish people celebrated. Purim, with Queen Esther, that's a two-day festival. One of my colleagues in the hospital is Jewish, and she always takes Purim off, and she always tells me about it. She says, this is the day the rabbi drinks too much, and it's a celebration. They love it. The Feast of Tabernacles, that's a seven-day festival. Hanukkah, many days. Obviously not an Old Testament tradition, but something that happened before the New Testament. The Jewish people were celebrating constantly. This is from Leviticus. It lists the appointed feasts. It actually talks about the Sabbath as an appointed feast. During the Sabbath, this happened every week. They would gather together and eat their best meal. It was a celebration. There was celebration baked into the life of the Jewish people. In Acts 2, 4, 6, in this early Acts church, you just see them like constantly gathering together, eating together, feasting together, taking communion together. Sometimes they were taking communion every day. When we were in Memphis, one of the things we got to do was be part of the house church system there. And what I loved, maybe my favorite part of it, was that we ate together every Sunday. You probably walked by at one of the stands and you could get a little communion glass. That's not what communion was. Communion was a celebration. And kind of what we do is a little different than that. Now in Clarkston, we do a house church. We meet together twice a week to eat together and to celebrate together. It's vital for our community. When we started Ethne Health, one of the coolest parts was we had all these staff from other countries, and they wanted to eat together and celebrate every lunch. And so if you come to our clinic, chances are we will be eating together and celebrating during lunch. Like first they started celebrating birthdays, half birthdays, quarter birthdays. It got to a point where it was a little ridiculous and we had to figure out some ground rules. But in so many cultures, and especially in the cultures of these people that were coming from immense trauma, like celebration is so essential. One of my favorite memories was when I first came to Clarkson. We were just walking around their neighborhood, and one of our neighbors is Corinne. We didn't know who she was. She's like, oh, just come in. And we're like, oh, okay. And they were celebrating something they do every 3 months of coming to America. And it was the coolest thing. And they just invited everyone. And we were literally just met her for the first time just walking around their neighborhood. But it was this... Yeah, it was just this culture of celebration. And I think that's essential to fulfilling this part of enjoyment. There's more to it, but we'll stop there. The second macronutrient here is satisfaction. So satisfaction means achieving something with struggle. So if you create an amazing cheat sheet and go to your MCAT and get a perfect score, I don't know what it's scored out of nowadays, you probably wouldn't feel very satisfied that you cheated to get a perfect score on the MCAT. But if you studied your butt off for 6 months and got a perfect score on the MCAT, you would feel satisfaction. You would feel achievement. So satisfaction comes with struggle and sacrifice. It's not something that comes without it. It's not something that comes from comfort. It comes from doing hard things. This is a story from King David where, this is after he asked for a census, and then there's a terrible punishment if you guys know this story. But at the end of it, he's making this offering to the Lord, and he says, I will not offer to the Lord my God something that costs me nothing. This idea is in Scripture of sacrifice being so essential, and it's because that's how we get satisfaction. It's essential to our happiness. And yet there's kind of a dark side to satisfaction. And if you guys might have experienced it, I love getting workout shoes, maybe too much. So when I save up and finally, after a long while of persuading my wife, I finally get my workout shoes that are new. About a few hours later, I want another pair. It's called a hedonic treadmill. Like, you get something and then you want even more. And there's no end to it. It's probably familiar. Ecclesiastes talks a lot about this. So this is from Solomon. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done, what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Obviously, he's a little dramatic here. But I think there's a truth here. Like, you can be satisfied, but it's really hard to stay satisfied. And why is that? What is it about our biology that makes it so hard to remain satisfied? And this is one of my favorite proverbs, a proverb I've been studying for the last few years, and it clicked. Like, this is what this proverb is talking about. So it says this: hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. Satisfaction is, and this is Arthur Brooks's formula, but he says satisfaction is what we have divided by what we want. So hope deferred makes the heart sick. So the more things we want, the bigger that denominator, which means our satisfaction goes down. But a longing fulfilled, what we have, is a tree of life. So if you increase what we have, then your satisfaction also goes up. The problem with this hedonic treadmill is what we want keeps on growing and growing and growing. And so no matter what we achieve, we're never satisfied because we want more and more and more. So one thing you guys have probably heard of is the concept of the bucket list. Arthur Brooks talks about, and that just increases your wants. It actually makes you less happy in the end. So he talks about this concept of the reverse bucket list. And so instead of saying what you want to accomplish in the next 10 years, you say, these are idols, these are things that I'm attached to, these are desires of my heart, and I no longer want these things. Or you can want them, but you're no longer attached to them in the deepest parts of your limbic system or your heart, whatever terminology you choose to use. And writing it down helps to release it. Praying and meditating about it helps to release these things. So I'm going to be super personal here and share kind of my reverse bucket list that I wrote a little while ago as I was preparing for this talk. And it was really hard to do this. I spent hours just thinking, what actually am I so attached to? And if you guys know me, you'll probably know some of this, probably won't. But this is what it took. And this is kind of a simplified version, but number one, to be the most knowledgeable physician. This became an idol in my life. Number two, to not have to work. Not that I'm lazy, but there's this dream of if I just make enough money and have enough savings, then I don't have to work and I can just do what I want. I don't know. And number three, to be physically fit. I realized that this had also become a real idol in my life. And I wrote these things down and I realized oftentimes I'm thinking about these things deep in my heart and it's just not up to the surface. So doing a reverse bucket list brings these things to the surface and it allows you to release them and say, God, even if these things do not happen, you are still good. I'm still happy. That's how you decrease your wants, is you create your reverse bucket list. This is essential. And this is what Jesus talks about. He says this, if anyone wants to follow after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. This is what it means to deny yourself. Create your reverse bucket list. Figure out those things that are yourself and let them go. I'm going to go back. I don't know if you guys remember in the beginning there was a survey about cross-cultural missionaries. This is also from the survey. And this is a really interesting part of it. The more satisfied someone was, a missionary, in their work, the less depressed and anxious they were. This is probably not surprising and is very logical and makes a lot of sense, but it's not hard. But it's very hard to be satisfied. As we said, like there's just so many dreams and things that we attach ourselves to, and so it becomes crucial if we want to stay in the work that we do, we figure out how to be more satisfied, that we deny ourselves and we make these reverse bucket lists or whatever system you want to create. It's essential. Okay. We've talked about the satisfaction. So what is it? Enjoyment, satisfaction, and in satisfaction, this is a good segue, but there's this incredible dialectic, dialectic in Christianity where we say, become nothing, deny yourself. And then we say, like, you're the one sheep out of 100, and God pursues after you. He's called you, and you are his chosen child. And it's important that we have both of them. And we see this in purpose. We want to decrease who we are in our satisfaction, and then we want to be called and purposeful in our purpose. And this is maybe the most important part of this triad of a macronutrient of happiness. Kind of think of it as the protein, which I think is just so vital. So there's a lot of ways to go about this, but the way you figure out whether you have purpose is whether you can answer these two questions. Why am I alive, and what am I willing to die for? So I'm not asking for you to say, oh, Jesus. To really answer these questions, you have to go through a process. It's actually extremely difficult to honestly answer these questions. And honestly, the first question I still really struggle with sometimes. Like, it's really asking, like, what is the mission statement of your life? And then the next question, I'm like, what am I willing to die for? Like, oh yeah, I'll die for my faith. But are you really willing to die for your faith? Are you really willing to sacrifice everything for the gospel? I don't know. And it requires hard work and suffering to actually even figure out the answers to these questions. You have to start by saying no to money, saying no to a difficult, saying no to a high-paying job and saying, no, I'm going to take less so I can obey Christ. It means, I don't know, like trying to figure out what actually makes us tick. And the depth of our happiness is dependent on this. So we can't have deep happiness without having deep answers for these questions that are built on life experience. One of the hardest things I've ever had to do was start Ethne Health. And if any of you know me, I went to this amazing family medicine residency program. But when I started that residency program, I said, I will never be an outpatient doctor. And lo and behold, like that's what we ended up doing. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. We've had many difficult nights, many sleepless nights. We've had two children in the process. It's been hard. We've made a lot of sacrifices. We question our decisions all the time. But it's built depth to who I am. It's made me realize, like, this is something I'm willing to sacrifice for. I don't know if I'm, like, yet to the point, like, am I willing to die for this cause I believe in? But I think I'm getting closer to that. And we have to really work on these parts of our purpose to try to be happy and joyful. This is the depth of our happiness. Okay, and I realize time is running out. I'm going to probably end here. So this is a picture of the creation story. And as I was kind of reading through this idea of enjoyment, satisfaction, and purpose, I thought about God's creation. When you guys imagine God creating the world, do you think he's happy? And so I thought about this, and if you can imagine, like if you believe this, that the Trinity is together during this story of creation. And Jesus, the Holy Spirit, God are probably like drinking some beers together, and God's like, I want to do something amazing. And he says, let there be light. And in this act of creating, I think he's immensely joyful. He's with his buddies. He's making this incredible memory. And I think in creating, it's what God does. It's what brings him pleasure. And so I think he's immensely enjoying himself there. And then what does he say at the end? He looked at everything he made and said, it was good. It was really good. That's satisfaction. He was satisfied at that moment in creation. And then we look at Isaiah 6:3 where it says, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. I think that was his purpose. He created the earth to be full of his glory. In this act of creation, God is immensely happy. And I think it's written on our DNA because of that. This is why we seek happiness, because in God's creation of us and our world, he was happy, and it seeps into all of our lives. So I think it's amazing and worth pursuing. Sorry, I have a ton more material, but I think it's time, so I'm going to stop here. This is an intro to happiness. There's so much more about actually pursuing happiness, and maybe I'll make a part two later for you guys. That's it. Thank you. Any questions? Okay.
I would like to add gratitude. I was thinking that, I like to read about happiness.
Oh, yeah.
So myself, I know that if you have a really good attitude to gratitude,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think gratitude is essential in this journey. And yeah, there's a bunch I talk about later about gratitude. But no time to get there. That's all right. Yeah. Awesome. Oh, yeah.
I just had a question about Jesus being happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds more like all those verses talking about him being happy is more like now that he's accomplished his ministry that God gave him. So was he a happy person while on earth?
I think he was. There's a lot of examples of Jesus being really joyful. And if you look at I think he was happy. And I kind of cut out a bunch of different references. But yeah, I think there's a very strong argument. He was very happy while he was on earth. He had a ton of suffering and difficulty. But I think he was also extremely happy. Yeah. Awesome.
Might be too long, but can you speak more into how the sadness and suffering fits into the framework of happiness?
Yeah, so to be truly satisfied requires struggle. It requires sacrifice and suffering, because that's how you get the most satisfaction. To figure out your purpose, the depth of it requires sacrifice and struggle and suffering. I think it's struggle and suffering are essential parts of being happy. Like if we, in our culture, like we see it's a happy-go-lucky culture, just be happy, avoid all the difficult stuff, sadness, you will never be happy that way. It requires true happiness, the true joy that comes from Christ requires suffering and difficulty and struggle. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What would you say? I feel like a lot of non-believers, usually the phrase I hear a lot more is like, I just want you to be happy. Like either to their kids or their friends. It's like, I don't really care what you do, but as long as you're doing something that makes you happy.
Yeah.
What would your, how would you?
You're saying in like the context of like just living life?
Yeah. I suppose so. Like how people find satisfaction.
Yeah. I think to those people you say like happiness isn't just doing the things that are positive. Like there's a wholeness to happiness. Just like the question about sacrifice. You can't be happy without doing hard things and sacrificing. And really like it leads to the gospel. Like you can't be truly happy without Christ. Awesome. Well, I'm going to finish now. I know the plenary is coming up, and thank you all so much for being an audience.